Thank you, admirable timing. Ron Schiffman, co-founder of the Pratt Institute for the Centre of Community and Environmental Development.
Well, I'm almost speechless after hearing all the speak we heard. I agree with a lot of what Michael says, but I know Amanda Burden, and I don't care what her income is. And I must tell you, and I sat on the City Planning Commission with her, and she was as concerned about low-income communities as she was concerned about some of our higher-income communities. I don't always agree with her, but I do believe in her integrity, and she's no George Bush. And so I really think, and I say that because one of the predicaments we're in is that we have no national housing policy, we have no state housing policy, and we do have a city housing policy. But that policy, my friends, didn't come from the benevolence of government. It came from the organizing of citizens around the city in the 70s, in the late 60s, and the 80s that gave birth to the resurgence of our neighborhoods. And when we talk about community involvement, let's not always think about it as the obstruction to development, because in New York, it was the group that spearheaded and jump-started the development. They embraced the architects. They worked with people, you know, that really would respond to them and undertake the work. And I think that's something we have to understand. It wasn't only the fact that community groups became the community developers in the absence of government role. They also got together, whether it was from the Bronx and Brooklyn, all over the city, and they forged the housing policies that helped launch HPD and the partnerships that worked between HPD and those community groups. So I think it's really important to understand them, not only in the role they played in development, but also in the role they played in creating the programs and the financing mechanisms. When we look at all of these plans, and it is a real pleasure to hear Sean talk, and I'll tell you, what Sean is doing and what Amanda are now doing is a result of that laborious public process. If we didn't have ULURP in New York, we wouldn't have inclusionary housing. If we didn't have ULURP, Marilyn years ago when she worked on Riverside South would not have included a certain percentage of low and affordable housing. We wouldn't have realistic scale of development. So those processes that create sort of a dynamic which engage citizens with government and create a civic, the three legs of what a civil society are built on, are critically important as we look forward to the new urban age. And that's the role of the citizens, it's the role of the private sector, and it's the role of government. And how do you bring them all three together in a creative way? And how do you use the creativity of architects to overcome some of the, and planners, to overcome some of the imponderables? How do we look at how we save the 4,000 manufacturing jobs in Williamsburg and Greenpoint? 4,000 jobs that are the muscle, no longer the fat, that can be thrown away. It's 220,000 jobs New York City has in the manufacturing sector. How do we protect that? They're not outdated jobs, they're just outpriced jobs because of the real estate market. When we rezone, we're upping the rents for them. How do we protect them and at the same time allow the housing to be developed on the waterfront? How do we take that economic engine of that waterfront and make sure we don't create zoning for sale, but at the same time enable us to provide affordable housing? Cities need to put infrastructure investment in. We shouldn't burden the developers on that. We need to make sure that if we're going to increase the density, we're not selling zoning. We have to make sure that if we're increasing the density, we have the transport to get people there, the schools, the social infrastructure. It means really analyzing the development while we're working on it. That's where planners and architects have to think about the spaces. How do you provide new space for manufacturing in such a way that it's compatible with the residential quality of that neighborhood? We can produce green buildings, we can produce green products, and we can produce green processes to produce those products. If we do all of that, we can reinvent the city in very creative ways. My concern about both the Manhattanville project and the Greenpoint project, and I played a role, I'm playing a role in both because I represent the communities in both those cases, is that we use the creativity, we look a little bit forward, we take in architects and planners, and we begin to look at how we shape that environment so Columbia doesn't become a wall to what is really an African-American and Latino public housing project, and full of people. I'll stop. Okay, because I think what's important is those people have a right to... Well, let me finish the thought. Making sure that the university there, I just want to build on something Enrique said before. He talked about the developing nations and the developed nations. We have, living cheek to jowl, a developing community and a developed community. And unless we think about the needs of that developing community in the same way we think about that intellectual community and link the two to develop both and provide opportunities for the low income, we're going to be doing an enormous disservice.